Today, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg doubled down on the alliance's commitment to Ukraine and condemned Russia's aggression in the war. And Stoltenberg gave this brief and stern warning to the allies about Russia's intentions.
There will be no lasting peace if the aggressor wins.
Joining us now is the European Union's ambassador to the United States, Stavros Lambrinidis. He's here to talk about Europe's support for Ukraine, its relationship with the U.S., and much more. Ambassador, welcome. It's good to speak with you.
Very good to speak with you, too.
So after this most recent midterm election, Republicans are going to be in control of the House, and some conservatives have been pretty clear they want to stop funding the war in Ukraine. Do you think U.S. support for Ukraine will waver?
All I can tell you is my experience. I've spoken to many Republicans and Democrats in the House and the Senate in the past weeks, and with virtually no exception, I've been told that the bipartisan support that was shown in aiding Ukraine up to now is going to continue to be as strong as ever. And I assured them that the European support in aiding Ukraine up to now, both in military support and equipment and in financial support, will be unwavering. And the fact of the matter is that no matter how many thousands of miles away this war is happening, there's no safe distance when an autocrat sitting on nuclear weapons is convinced that he can bend the will of our leaders and our democracies to his own through force. And if he were to succeed, if Russia were to win, Russia, mind you, is China's junior partner, if China were to be emboldened, then American and European security interests around the world and our presence would be injured, you know, for decades to come.
Staying with American politics for just a moment, last week our former President Donald Trump announced that he is running for president again. Does that mean that Europe is preparing for another potential shift in its relationship with the United States at this point?
I don't believe so. I really don't. I think that the war in Ukraine has been a game changer in the way that many in this country have viewed not just the world, but also the indispensability of the transatlantic relationship, Americans and Europeans together. The massive sanctions we imposed on Russia against its military, against its economy, would not have been able had Americans done it alone, and would not have been able had Europeans done it alone.
But I guess my question is, if the war is still waging in 2024 and there is a different president in the White House, meaning Donald Trump, is Europe concerned?
I am not concerned, and Europe is not concerned. Certainly, we do not comment on U.S. domestic politics. It's not our job to do so. But as I said, there's been a paradigm shift here. Many people understand that issues that existed in the past and some disputes that we had, those issues, we do not have the luxury anymore, given this shifting world, to be placing at the forefront of this relationship. And I am sure that this will continue to be the case in the future.
You say there is unity, but across Europe, there's also signs that the welcome mat is wearing thin for Ukrainian refugees in Europe. In Ireland, housing is very scarce and shelters are full. In Germany, we see recently that a hotel for refugees was set on fire, and the police believe it was an apparent act of political arson. There are far-right members of political groups protesting Ukraine policy in the Czech Republic. Do you see cracks of dissent building across Europe?
No, I don't. But don't get me wrong. This is very, very difficult for Europe, this war. The Europeans are lifting the lion's share of the economic consequences of this war without the slightest doubt. If you look at the energy prices in Europe, they've gone up as much as 10 times the prices last year, creating, extreme difficulty for our companies, our workers, our citizens. If you look at the waves of refugees, indeed, I'm glad you mentioned it, 11 million people from Ukraine have come to Europe in the past few months. 4.5 million of them have asked for temporary protection, which means, you know, free schooling for their children, the right to work, the right to health care, the right to housing. Europeans have opened up their arms in every European member state in ways that are simply remarkable. We have pulled the rug from under Putin's plans to try not only to kill Ukrainians literally on the ground, but also to kill their spirit by sending them out of the country in the hopes that they would be, shunned or not helped. The exact opposite has happened in Europe. But of course, this war creates difficulties. Of course, we are very focused in Europe to ensure that both in the energy area and in the refugee area, we are standing next to our member states. If you look at the refugee case, $20 billion have been already given to our member states to be able to support them in housing and feeding and schooling all these refugees, those children mostly, and women and old people who had to be to leave the country because, you know, Putin kicked them out of the country. So, of course, Europe has 450 million people. There will, of course, be people of extreme ideologies who will be protesting. They were doing it before the Ukraine war. They will be doing it after it. But please have no doubt on European unity and support for Ukraine. This is an existential challenge for us, and we will continue to be standing by Ukraine. And you will see in the next few months, don't take my word for it, just watch.
Speaking of energy in the coming winter, that is a concern across Europe. How far along is the EU to getting itself off of Russian fossil fuels? When will Europe be completely free of it?
So let me give you a statistic. Before the war started, we were importing about 40% of our gas pipeline needs from Russia. Today, a few months after the war, we're importing only 7%. Only 7%. The Europeans have put a massive effort in decoupling ourselves from our dependence on Russian fossil fuel, and we have done so at tremendous cost, it goes without saying, but with tremendous determination, because we know that we cannot allow our energy security to in any way rely anymore on Russia. I have to say that I am very, very pleased with the American support in terms of substituting U.S. LNG for gas we're getting from Russia. We have managed, because of that support and because of the support of Norwegians and others around the world, to be able to fill our gas supplies to the maximum. So we know that this winter, no matter what Russia does, and it will do even try to do even worse things, that we're going to be fine. When I say we're going to be fine, the costs are going to be very high, the difficulties are going to be there, but we are going to be fine. And then the real question is 2023 and 2024, we will be able to continue having this supply of gas from others in increasing quantities as well.
At that point, are you at 0% 2023, 2024?
No, we're not 0%, but certainly we have depleted quite a bit of our storage right now. So it's clear that it's very important for our emphases, for our U.S. Allies' emphases, from others' emphases to be on how it is that we are, that Europeans can continue buying those gas supplies from others. But in addition to that, let me just tell you that we're doing two very important things. We are not a full fossil fuel producing continent. Our own energy independence, our own homegrown energy is renewable energy. And Europeans have been investing in renewable energy innovation and production for decades. Today, because of our investments, the economies of scale of that energy, the prices of that energy, wind, solar, etc., are even lower in many instances than fossil fuel energy. And we are front-loading those investments as we speak.
Before we leave you, I want to address the conditions, the battlefield conditions right now. Ukraine, clearly on the offensive, taking land away from the Russians. Is it time now for Kyiv to negotiate with Moscow to end this war?
I will tell you what we've said all along. The Ukrainians have to make that decision. But we will make sure that if they make it or when they make it, it's going to be a decision that will allow them to negotiate not with a Russian gun on their heads. And so I do not know when this ends. What I do know is that for it to end, Ukrainians must be in a position to discuss with Russians on an equal footing. And this is precisely what we ought to be doing and we are doing right now.
But if it doesn't end anytime soon, if it drags on for a year or two or three more, is there any time limit or financial cap to Europe's support?
We have said quite openly that we will support Ukraine for as long as it takes, quote unquote. And we mean it. And this has to be understood, not just for us, but also for the United States, is what I said at the beginning. Listen, if ending this war means that Putin wins it, means that force can be used to blackmail Americans and Europeans, not to mention Ukrainians and others, into submission, then American and European security interests around the world will be seriously, seriously injured for decades to come. It is a big deal. And we are doing exceptionally well together on a transatlantic basis in pushing the needle in the right direction. So that's why I do not believe that we will change for a second, both U.S. bipartisan support and European support to Ukraine. And if we keep the course, I think we're going to be okay, and so will the world.
Stavros Lambronidis is the EU ambassador to the United States. Mr. Ambassador, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Much appreciated. Thank you.